You are listening to Larry Connors, USA.
You want answers?
I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth!
You can't handle the truth!
This is Larry Connors, USA. Larry Connors, USA.
Many Democrats like to pretend their open border policies are somehow humane. There is nothing humane about what Joe Biden and Kamala Harris are doing at the border. They're subjecting kids to horrific abuse. They're endangering their lives in a pandemic by keeping them locked up in cages right on top of each other. And then they're releasing illegal aliens into the United States who are testing positive for COVID at a rate seven times higher than the U.S. population. This is a humanitarian crisis, it is a health crisis, and it's a national security crisis.
March 29, 2021, Senator Ted Cruz of Texas. Yes, what we have at the border does also qualify as a national security crisis. You have to keep that in mind. It's already been acknowledged that we have had many come across the border, or being caught anyway, that are not from Central America, the Northern Triangle. They're not from Mexico. They're not even from Cuba. They are from China or places in the Middle East. If you were a terrorist trying to get into our nation, and you know you cannot board a plane and come to New York or L.A. or Dallas, that you'd be spotted, what do you think would be the best and easiest way to get into this country? You can't go to Canada and try to come in illegally because, first of all, you got to be accepted in Canada. But if you can get your way to Central America or Mexico, blend in with one of the caravans, you got a chance of getting into the U.S. Now, how many terrorist cells do you think might be in place as I speak in the U.S.? And more will be coming. And then we have the issue with these kids. We have thousands of kids. They cannot find enough facilities for them. Senator Ted Cruz went down with some other senators and documented what they saw. They were not allowed to take a news crew. They did have one with them, but the Border Patrol and ICE, whoever was in charge at that particular point, said they're not allowed inside. They are traveling with a U.S. senator, and they said you cannot allow them to get pictures. So the senators took their own pictures, although there were instances where they were pushed back and told, don't take pictures. We're going to get into all of that. And this point about how many are coming across with COVID, the numbers out of Mexico now should frighten you. Mexico revising its coronavirus death toll up by 60%, a 60% increase. Mexico now is the second most deaths globally, something like 300 plus thousand deaths. So do you have any doubt that anyone coming through Mexico might be subjected or carrying COVID? If there's an outbreak in Texas under a Republican governor, or in Florida, where both are Republican governors and both took off the mask mandates, watch the left blame it on mask mandate lifting, not illegals. We're going to get into that. H.R. 1, we talked about before, it's an effort to federalize elections. We're going to look at that and the Georgia election law. There's so much complaints and confusion over it. If you hear the Georgia law would not allow folks to have food or drink in line because it's a way to make those who are poor or are suffering, they can't stand in line, put them, you know, that you're not going to be able to give them food or drink, that's kind of a lie. I'll break it down for you. Senator Lindsey Graham says if you are a white Republican, you're automatically going to be labeled racist now. If you're a black Republican, you're going to be labeled a token, a pawn, an Uncle Tom for conservatives, for whites. We're going to get into that. And John LaBoutière from New York would join us, former U.S. Congressman, always candid. And this story. In Vancouver, a Canadian father fighting to keep his daughter, age 14, from getting testosterone injections so she could become a boy. The judge ruled that if the father even referenced his child as a girl or with female pronouns, she, he would be guilty of family violence. Jeremiah J. Keenan is a pro-life activist. He did an article on this case for The Federalist, and I'm going to have him joining me in this first hour. This is a story that it should send shockwaves through the entire world of anyone concerned about protecting children. But, of course, you never can tell with some on the left if they're really concerned about protecting children or advancing progressive rights at the expense of children. And we're also going to look at some of the latest concerns about COVID in this nation. And I have a personal story I'm going to relate. And some who know this story have already asked me, Larry, is this changing your position on getting a vaccination? This is a story that hits very close to home for me. I'll give you details of that story and also tell you how it does or does not change my view. Lock and load, ready on the right.
You can email Larry at LarryConnorsUSA@gmail.com. LarryConnorsUSA@gmail.com.
If you think disinfecting a home or office for COVID is way too expensive, I've got great news for you. Wellington Environmental can disinfect most homes for less than $300. I know you were thinking the cost would be two, three, maybe four times as much. Wellington can professionally disinfect most homes for less than $300. Cost for most offices, not much higher. You get the same professional treatment that Wellington provides hospitals and nursing homes. Also, Wellington is selling professional fogging devices. The cost, $500. But say you heard about it from Larry Connors and save $100. Here's a phone number to schedule Wellington to treat your home or office. 314-644-4930. I urge you to get on the schedule early. 314-644-4930. 644-4930. Be well with Wellington. Wellington Environmental. This segment of Larry Connors USA is brought to you by my friends at John Beal Roofing, covering homes and businesses throughout the Midwest. Best quality, lowest prices. John Beal, 1-800-NEW-ROOF. 1-800-NEW-ROOF.
This is Larry Connors USA.
Larry Connors USA.
H.R. 1 is the biggest power grab in the history of the country. It institutionalizes ballot harvesting. It does away with the voter ID requirement. It will take over every election in every state. It makes the Federal Election Commission a partisan commission. It will no longer be bipartisan. So that's the power grab we're standing up to.
That is Senator Lindsey Graham, and of course he's referring to H.R. 1 and its companion bill in the Senate. It is an attempt to federalize our elections. Your state, wherever you are, they have a rule set where you have to show an ID. No, that'll be wiped out. H.R. 1 won't require any of that. You have a certain time frame for elections? Nope. They will decide. All of this, as Senator Graham said, is a huge power grab by the Democrats, trying to make sure that now that they've got both the House and the Senate, and, of course, the White House, then they can run through as many bills and as much as they can, like a kid in a candy shop, filling their pockets and running out the door before everybody says enough to get away with what they can. This is not an attempt by H.R. 1 and Senate Bill 1 reflecting it. It's not an effort to really bring voter integrity. It's to destroy voter integrity. And they are pointing to a recently passed Georgia law, which just got signed into law last week, passed by the Republican legislature in Georgia and signed by the Republican governor, saying, see, here's why we need to have federalizing of the state laws. Georgia's new slate of voting laws under the title the Election Integrity Act of 2021, passed on a party line vote. It does make a number of changes on how elections are to be done. It is a massive piece of legislation, but it's not as big as what we've got going on at the federal level with H.R. 1. That is 800-plus pages. The Georgia laws falls, I think, around just under 100 pages. It changes a lot of absentee voting. Mail-in absentee voting basically would be trying to keep a better control on it when they can come in and shutting them off at a certain time. The final deadline to complete an application would be the Friday before Election Day. And counties could begin mailing out absentee ballots starting 4 weeks before the election. Now, there are a lot of pieces in this law, but what I want to stress to you is that what you're always going to hear from many on this, you're not going to be allowed to have anybody bring you water or food on the line. If you're standing in a long line waiting to vote, you just have to suffer. You have to suffer because they're not going to be allowed to bring you anything. It's against the law. You cannot have groups, PAC groups, showing up offering, say, you're going to vote Democrat, here's a Coke for you. Or you could go the other way. You're Republican, here's a sandwich for you. Of course, some people would lie. I mean, if you're standing in line, you're thirsty, and somebody's offering you water or soda, if you vote a certain way, how would they know how you're going to vote? You might say, yeah, I'm going to do that. Give me that. Give me. But the election judge at each location and his workers can provide water and things of that nature. They're not going to be bringing food to you, but they can supply that for those who are out in the heat, especially in the Georgia heat, if it's a summer election or even a November election. So they will not be dropping like flies in the line, which is what the Democrats want you to believe is happening. You're not going to allow them to have anything to drink or eat. You're trying to punish them. Now, we're just trying to make sure that PAC groups don't come in and try to, quote, buy votes at the scene. But look for the common reaction from the left. Georgia Senator Ralph Warnock, Democrat of Georgia, remember he got elected in that special election, and we said Republicans have to win one of those two seats. They lost both of them. Now Senator Warnock says states in general, including his, are trying to suppress the vote by pursuing basic election integrity measures under the actions of that it's to help you vote. And, of course, you're going to see this all the time going forward. And you're also seeing additional pressure. Pro sports and activist groups joining in an effort to force Major League Baseball and the PGA, professional golfers, to boycott the state of Georgia after the state government passed the election reform bill. Masters, of course, scheduled to be held in Augusta, Georgia in August. The MLB All-Star Game scheduled to take place in July. But now, with those bills passed or the new election law in Georgia, they're pushing back. They're trying to put it down, shut it down. And there are suits coming forward already, lawsuits challenging that law, which just got signed in. The rhetoric on the left is inflammatory in many levels. If folks would just calm down and take a moment to actually read what it says, you might still have some differences. But don't buy the lies about the Georgia law. Don't buy the lies, I would say, also about the H.R. 1. There are some things in there that might have some validity. But right now, it's definitely a power grab, as Senator Graham said. It's sick. Larry Sabato is a, or Sabato, I think, might be the better pronunciation. I've interviewed him in the past. He is an American political scientist, political analyst at the University of Virginia. Also the founder and director of the Center for Politics, which promotes civic engagement and participation. So you think maybe as a Center for Politics, he's actually trying to bring about legitimate voting, that he'd be concerned if it's fraudulent voting? Not when you watch some of his tweets and his reaction. He says the Georgia GOP says the new law prevents voter fraud. He says it actually prevents the crime of VWB. VWB, voting while black. There's nothing in there that says if you're a certain color, you can't vote. And there's nothing in there that denies anyone an opportunity to vote, except that they will have to show who they are when they come up to vote. Voter ID. I really want to hear Democrats explain to me, why do you not want to know who's voting? Don't you want voter integrity at your side? And it's not something that's unheard of nowadays. Most folks have some kind of picture ID for so many things, to use a credit card in some cases. Certainly to drive, but if you're not a driver, they can also make voter ID available in states, and they do often at DL offices, driver's license offices. There's a line set up. If you don't want, you're not getting a driver's license, you just need a picture ID, you do that. There should never be a problem with just saying, prove who you are so you can vote. Do you want somebody going ahead of you and stealing your vote? What if Democrats, what if we bust a lot of Republicans into one of your Democrat precincts and they just went up and started voting, stealing the votes of the Democrats there? That's fraud. I know you'd scream about it then. And again, Senator Graham saying the problem is, if you as a conservative complain, especially if you're a white conservative, the race card's going to be pulled constantly, Senator Graham.
So every time a Republican does anything, we're a racist. If you're a white conservative, you're a racist. If you're a black Republican, you're either a prop or Uncle Tom. They use the racism card to advance a liberal agenda, and we're tired of it.
Yeah, and like I say, they're also taking a lot of lies and building specifically around that Georgia law. I mean, I agree. When I first heard, you're not going to be able to have food or drink on the line? Well, what kind of law is that? Well, once you look at it, you realize it's not that you're denied having it, but we can't have special groups come in because you're not supposed to campaign within a certain area of the voting polls. You know that. But if you're delivering sodas and food and you're identifying yourself or asking if you're going to vote Democrat or Republican one way or the other, then that's campaigning. But here's the reaction of someone else who was replying to Larry Sabato's remarks. I think the single most offensive thing in this new law is making it a crime to offer food and drink to people who stand in line to vote. It's not a crime. It's that you can't do it, but the election board can do it. That's, I guess if you're going to say it's a crime to that extent, yeah. But no one has said you can't have it. You can bring your own in line if you want. But again, it's the issue of politicizing the point. Be one side or the other. And both sides do it. But then we also have this crisis at the border, the immigration issue. I'm going to get into that in more detail in the second hour. But the reason I want to focus on it now is, again, because what we hear from the left, why they're so concerned about voter rights and humane conditions and the children, especially at the border, they're not showing that concern right now. And we have a crisis going on at the border. They still want to acknowledge it. Democrats are not flocking down there with camera crews to show pictures of how bad it is. And they're not even going down there. Kamala Harris, given her assignment last week by President Biden that she's going to be the point person on it, she's not scheduling any trip to the border. Neither is Biden at this point. And then over the weekend, Jen Psaki, the White House spokeswoman, was on with Chris Wallace. And since they're still not being transparent, when Biden said they would be transparent, Wallace did a pretty good job of asking Psaki directly, where is your transparency? Please listen.
Why not allow reporters and camera crews in on a pool basis safely to take pictures and show the American people what's happening in those Border Patrol facilities right now?
Chris, we're absolutely committed to that. The president's committed to that. I'm committed to that. Secretary Mayorkas is committed to that. Just last week, we had a pool camera, including providing footage to Fox News just last week into the shelters. We want to provide access into the Border Patrol facilities. We are mindful of the fact that we are in the middle of a pandemic. We want to keep these kids safe, keep the staff safe. But we are absolutely committed to transparency and providing access to media to the Border Patrol facilities, and we're working to get that done as soon as we can.
No, they're not. No, they're not. They are not. And I love the way she plays. It's the pandemic. It's because of the pandemic. We cannot allow a camera crew in. Really. If the camera crew went in a hazmat suit, they still would not allow them to go in because they don't want you to see what's happening inside. So Senator Cruz the other day, leading some senators down, they did get some pictures inside. Although, as I said, There were representatives of the Biden administration getting in their face telling me, don't be shooting pictures with your cell phone. Respect the children. Respect the children. The children are jammed on top of each other. And if you're really worried about your COVID issue, what are you doing for those children? And I just told you a moment ago that the numbers out of Mexico, they've now revised them up, and they said clearly that they have more deaths than they've been reporting. They're in Mexico now, the second most deaths globally, 320,000 deaths. And I don't know if they're all Mexican. They might be many Central Americans going through. But again, what is in play is the Biden administration trying to reverse everything Trump did. That's all they're doing primarily. They really don't care, except they want their way. Listen.
Our objective is to take a different approach from the last administration. We are not going to send children under the age of 18, kids under the age of 18, back on this treacherous journey. They are fleeing challenging economic circumstances, hurricanes, prosecution in some scenarios. It does not mean that they get to stay in the United States. It means their cases are adjudicated. And we want to treat them humanely, make sure they're in a safe place while their cases are adjudicated. That's what we're talking about here.
Yeah, that's what they're talking about. But think of how those kids went through before they got to the border. And you're encouraging it. We're going to get into that in more detail in the next hour. But I've got a guest coming up at this hour, and I want to give you a setup for it now. When we return, you're going to begin to hear a Canadian report on a Canadian father trying to keep his child from undergoing hormone therapy. Stand by.
You can connect with Larry on Twitter at LarryConnorsUSA.
This is Larry Connors, USA.
Larry Connors, USA.
Because here I am sitting there as a parent watching a perfectly healthy child be destroyed. And there's nothing I can do but sit on the sideline and, according to Justice Bowden at the time, cheer it on. I could only affirm or get thrown in jail.
For the past 11 months, Canadian father Robert Hoogland's now 15-year-old daughter has been receiving testosterone injections by court order. The process began in late February of last year when Justice Bowden of the British Columbia Supreme Court ruled that the then 14-year-old girl should be medically transitioned to a boy regardless of the wishes of either of her parents. While the girl's mother was willing to cooperate, her father was distraught.
This will not change her DNA. She will not become a boy. It can lead to increased heart disease and other risks of that nature, different types of cancers. Because they're going to be stopping her puberty, her bone density will stop right where it is. And I kept saying, no, this is not going to happen. I'm not consenting.
According to the courts, however, Rob's consent wasn't relevant. In fact, Justice Bowden went one step further, declaring that Rob and his wife had to affirm their daughter's new gender identity. Rob was told that if he tried to dissuade his daughter or refer to her as a girl, he would be considered guilty of family violence.
You heard that right. That if he continued to refer to his child, his 14-year-old daughter, as a girl, I use the pronouns she, her, he would be guilty of family violence in Vancouver. We're going to have a guest coming up in the next segment. We're going to break this story down in more detail. But the essence, as you just heard it, Robert Hoogland, actually arrested by the British Columbia Supreme Court in Vancouver for speaking against the court-ordered testosterone injections for his teenage daughter. I mean, he was denied bail. And the justice then issued an oral decision last Friday confining him to stay in jail until his case is tried on April the 12th, 2021. Well, at least it's this year. But it's in April 12th. Still a few days. A father being jailed because he's trying to keep his daughter, 14 years old, from undergoing a radical change in her body. Does any 14-year-old really know what they want at that point? 18-year-old, 24-year-old, sometimes 30-plus. His wife has apparently been going along with it, and so because she is, they're just going to pound down on the father because they believe in the child knows best. This is how far we've gotten off the track. And off the track in this case. Not just this case, but everything lately. We cannot allow our nation to follow down what we're seeing up in Canada and that one ruling, or the rest of the world. It happens there, just across the border to our north. Won't be long before they implement it here. They're already doing it. They're already, as we told you last week, they're already beginning to teach kids in school about transgender surgeries and things of that nature, pushing them in that direction without the parents being aware of it. Stand by for the guest, please.
You can hear podcasts of this program at Larry Connors USA Facebook. Larry Connors USA Facebook.
I'm sure many of you do enjoy entertaining guests. I mean, it's your nature to be hospitable, but we all draw the line at unwelcome guests. You know, those that come in tramping around, they're 6 feet, 8 feet, more. And when that happens, you do not want to delay. Call Rottler Pest Solutions immediately. Now, I started using Rottler more than 30 years ago because I wanted professionals. Rottler knows what is needed and at the same time will make sure that your family and pets are safe. Rottler is still family-owned and operated for 3 generations, protecting homes and businesses. 3 generations. That's impressive. So when you want to safely, expertly get rid of ants, spiders, and other critters, call Rottler Pest Solutions, 877-ROTTLER, or you can check their website, rottler.com, 877-ROTTLER, 877-ROTTLER, Rottler Pest Solutions, rottler.com.
This is Larry Connors USA.
Larry Connors USA.
Welcome back. My guest is Jeremiah Keenan, a pro-life activist and a contributor to the Federalist, and he wrote the article that we're going to be referring to. And, of course, as you heard in the preceding segment, the basic setup for the story involving the Canadian father, Robert Hoogland. Jeremiah, first of all, glad to have you on board.
Thank you, Larry. Thanks for having me on.
Can you speak up a little bit, sir?
Yes, yeah, thank you good. For having me.
You bet. And, yes, Lou muffled, so I need you to be a little bit louder for us. Now, when I left the story with the folks a moment ago, of course, I was trying to book you last week. We just couldn't get our time together. The father was in jail and going to be held there until April 12th, 2021. Is he still in jail at this moment?
Yes, Robert Hoogland is still in jail at this moment, last I've heard. He's currently being kept in, because of their COVID regulations, he's being kept in a separate cell. He is allowed out to exercise a few hours each day.
And again, specifically, why is he in jail at this moment?
So he's specifically in jail at this moment because he broke a publication ban and he spoke under his own name to the media, myself and others, and he also used the names of 2 of the doctors involved in giving his daughter cross-sex hormones, testosterone.
And all of that was imposed on him because he had already been told that you cannot stop your daughter, your 14-year-old, from having testosterone injections if she wants them. And if you even refer to her as a her, a she, a girl, you will be guilty of family violence.
Yes, so that happened earlier. He was convicted of family violence on the sole basis. Well, it's not the sole basis, but on the basis of having referred to his daughter as a girl in an interview. They were also angry at him because he did the interview in the first place, right? But there was nothing. It was purely on the basis of his speech to the media, sharing information with the media. He was convicted of family violence. And one of the listed things that he did to get that conviction was referring to his daughter as a girl.
This is all out of the British Columbia Supreme Court. I mean, the British Columbia Supreme Court is involved in this case. It's not a lower court, correct?
Yes. So in British Columbia, the Supreme Court is actually underneath the appeals court. So it's not at the very bottom. It's about a middle ranking court.
Right. But again, it's as you say, it's not the first time in a court case. Now, his belief was, if I the way you wrote it in an excellent article you did, that he believes that parents, but he says people in general need to know what happened to his daughter because it wasn't being shared. I mean, the authorities were not speaking out. They were not going to give any details. And he said, she's being lost in this. And, of course, he believes, if I understand you right, she's not really qualified to make this decision.
Yes, so that's exactly right. The doctors wanted to start shooting her up with testosterone when she was 13 years old. And they gave him a call to get consent. His ex-wife called him to check for his consent. And he was like, no,
I'd say hell no, but you go ahead.
Right. So he was like, because he isn't sort of from a conservative background. He's kind of a centrist. He didn't worry about politics much. Politics came after him. He delivers mail for the Canada Post. He wasn't like really into politics. Anyway, this stuff came after him, and he finally was like, no, you can't do this to her because it's too bad for her physically long term. Remember, you can't reverse these treatments. It's not like you can give her some estrogen and make the testosterone go away, right? When you do this to a kid during puberty, it's permanent, right? So it was at that point when they wanted to shoot her up with testosterone, he said no. And then they, after over a couple of months, they just eventually said, you know what, we're going to do it without your permission under the BC Infants Act. So this was back in late 2018 and then early 2019. And so he took it to court in late 2018, and the lower court blocked the doctors from giving her testosterone. But then when it got to the BC Supreme Court in 2019, late February of 2019, Justice Bowden there, he ruled that she should receive testosterone at the time she was 14 years old, just barely 14 years old, on the sole basis of her own consent, that she did not need any parental consent to receive these cross-sex hormones.
You quote a statement from him, which we had on tape a moment ago, but the way you quote it, and folks, you're listening again at this time to Jeremiah Keenan, a contributor for Federalist on this case involving Robert Hoogland and his daughter in British Columbia. And you quote him as saying, what kind of father would I be, let's say, in 5-10 years, my daughter the print kind of got scrambled on this, but basically she turns to me, my printer's not printing everything off, but basically said, what kind of father I would be if I didn't step back? And she says, you just let me do it. Why didn't you stop it? Or something of that nature. Is that pretty close? Like say, my printer is not putting everything out for me.
Yes. Yes. I have it in front of me. 5-10 years, my daughter is detransitioning and she turns to me and says, you know, Dad or Mom, why did none of you do anything to stop this? You know, I was just a kid then. And he was saying, when my daughter asked me that question, I'll say I did everything I possibly could. And for him, what could he do? Right. The courts just said, sit down, shut up, call your daughter a boy. And that was it. And so he said the only thing he could do was speak to the media, was try to raise some public awareness of the fact that the courts were deciding that a 14-year-old girl, and if you look at the full context of the case, it started when she was 13, that a 13-year-old girl was competent to consent without any parental consent whatsoever, was competent to take cross-sex hormones.
This gender therapy practice, I mean, we're seeing it escalate everywhere. And last week I was informing the audience here about how some school districts in the U.S. have been basically teaching some gender transitioning ideas and visions. to young people, and I think basically push them that direction. They never even considered it. It's almost kind of like it's become a lark to be popular, to be different, maybe to stand out, to have special attention, that kids might be going down this line, and they are going to, many of them, end up regretting it. In fact, many who have fully transitioned through sex changes and so forth, as adults, later admit, I wish I hadn't, but there's no reversal at that time, or successful, I should say.
Right. Yes. So it is important to note that this whole story began with his daughter when she was 12 years old in the schools, and the counselor gives her a male name and starts to treat her as a boy while deliberately not informing her father. So the parents in this case are divorced, but they had equal 50-50 custody, right? So she went to his house after school. But the counselor decided, oh, your dad might possibly not support this. All right, we will hide this from him on purpose, and at school we'll treat you as a boy, and then you can go home, and they'll be none the wiser, right? So he found out about this after a couple of months. After this had been going on at school for a couple of months, his daughter came and told him, right? And so that's how he found out. He looked at the yearbook, and she has a new name in the yearbook.
Oh,
so that's kind of how this
that's
works.
How he found out?
Mm-hmm. Yep. She came and told him because she knew he was going to see the yearbook. So she kind of brought it to him and was like, okay, this is what's happened. But by that point, it had already been a couple of months at the school that they had been doing this.
And she is already putting herself on that path, and the school's assisting her and hiding it from the parent, which is the other point.
Exactly, right. And that's, by the way, that's the standard kind of policy objective for LGBT kind of organizations, both in the United States and in Canada. It's just that in British Columbia, I guess they have a bit more power, right? And that's kind of happening, or certainly happened in Robert Hoogland's daughter's case. But that's the objective, right? You get them in the school, you separate it from the parents, you hide it from the parents so the parent doesn't know what's going on. You brainwash the kid for a while. Then once you already have the kid, especially when you start with like a 12-year-old girl who's struggling in life, her parents got divorced shortly before then. She was kind of looking for a sense of identity, I think. And certainly he says she was struggling psychologically. She was. You get a kid like that. You tell him, oh, you're actually the opposite sex. We'll get you a good new name, a new identity, everything minted new at school. And then we'll hide it from your parents. And then by the time the parents find out, it's already become a big mess.
You know, we have so many new laws and efforts. I don't know where they stand in Canada to prevent, quote, bullying of kids, either Facebook or even on school grounds, in class and so forth. So in the past, if you called a boy a sissy or a girl, nowadays that'd be considered bullying. In this case, we've gone past just using a phrase, and we're encouraging and endorsing such actions for children actually to assume a different gender.
Mm-hmm. Yes, that's right.
So bottom line, first of all, the child is still going through the transition. Is that right?
So she's been on testosterone now for about 2 years. At this point, she has some facial hair. Her voice has deepened. Certain things at this point, she's not going to be able to go back from ever.
And the father has a court date coming up the 12th of April to maybe get out of jail simply because he refused to keep quiet about it, correct?
So on April 12th, there's going to be a criminal trial. He's going to be tried for criminal contempt of court.
All right.
So what is his criminal activity? He talked to the media under his own name.
All right. We'll keep an eye on that. You keep me posted. Thanks very much, Jeremiah. We appreciate it. That's Jeremiah. Thanks, Jeremiah Keenan. I want to show you what's happening in Iowa right now, reference gender identity for bathrooms and kids. Stand by.
Connors USA.
Larry Connors USA.
All right, so here's what I want to share with you coming out of Iowa. A plurality of Iowans supporting requiring students to use bathrooms according to their birth gender, regardless of their gender identity. That's a Des Moines Register, Mediacom, Iowa poll, and it found 47% support such a measure. In other words, that if you are born a boy, you must use the boys' restroom. If you're a girl, you must use the girls'. 47% support that in this poll in Iowa. 42% opposed to it. 42% opposed to such an idea. 11%, well, I don't know where I sit. You don't know where you stand on something like that? How could you be that dense that you don't have some opinion, even if it's a wrong opinion? This was Iowans, about 775, not a big, big group, but 18 or older, and they say it's within a 3.5% margin of error. So it's very possible that there might be more than 47% supporting it, and there might also be more than 42% opposed to it. And the survey fell mostly along party lines, 80% Republicans in favor of it, 14% Republicans opposing it. Democrats, 15% in favor of it, 71% opposing it. All of this coming weeks after a bathroom bill in Iowa failed to advance in the state house. It would have required those in Iowa schools to use bathrooms according to the sex listed on their birth certificate. And that's where the voters say, in that poll anyway, say, yeah, we want to keep it that way. But the woke culture continues to take its toll on so many things. There's a novel, you might be familiar with it with your kids, Captain Underpants series. Now one of the books that was released in 2010 is being pulled because even the author is apologizing, saying it has harmful racial stereotypes and is wrong and harmful to my Asian readers. Again, this is a book that came out in 2010, part of the Captain Underpants publications. It's a pair of friends who travel from 5,000 or 500,000 B.C. to 2222, where they meet a martial arts officer, an instructor, I should say, who teaches them kung fu, and they learn principles found in Chinese philosophy. Somewhere in there, someone started complaining that this is anti-Asian, it's racist, and the book author bought into it and said, yeah, you're right. I said, I hope that you, my readers, will forgive me, learn from my mistake that even unintentional and passive stereotypes and racism are harmful to everyone. I apologize. I pledge to do better. And, of course, this all follows the reports of deadly violence against Asian Americans since the pandemic began, which, and again, is trying to blame it on Trump because he said it came from China. The flu. And don't forget, earlier this month, Dr. Seuss publishers pulled six of his books because they depicted groups of Asian Americans who were wrong. Same thing with the Aristocats and some of the other Disney movies. All of this cancel culture is underway everywhere. And then where you look where you expect to see it, you do not. You do not see it. What you end up seeing is not just irony. You find farce. You remember I told you last week that VP Kamala Harris was to meet for a one-on-one conversation with former President Bill Clinton. One of the things they were going to discuss is empowering women and girls. Empowering women and girls. That was the title. And you probably want to know what happened with it. Well, first of all, before they got to that meeting Friday, it was already being slammed by many social media, criticizing the purpose of it after that announcement, saying, are you absolutely tone-deaf, given Bill Clinton's numerous accusations of sexual harassment in the past, and you, Kamala, are going to sit down with him and have a discussion about empowering women? Well, yes, she did. Yes, she did. They went ahead and had it. This is the same Kamala Harris who in the past had complained about Bill Clinton herself in the sense of his predatory sexual advances and Me Too criticism. She has made those criticisms against Bill Clinton in the past. But now you don't want to know how she handled it. She began by saying, it's an honor. It's an honor to join you. It was a virtual meeting. So maybe because she didn't have to be actually next beside him in a room, maybe it was still an honor. Oh, and then she went into, she added at one point that Harris saying people should try to be present while living their lives and also forgive yourself for misdeeds. Well, Bill Clinton certainly grabbed on that. He said, that's good advice. You should be willing to forgive yourself and move on. Kamala set it up for him perfectly. And she gushed to him at one point, talking to Bill Clinton. This is our current vice president. I know you during the course of your presidency, but your life work, you've always focused on the issue of poverty, what we must do to lift folks out of poverty. No reference whatsoever about empowering women in the sense that they should stand up and fight back when a boss, a superior, starts preying on them, harassing them sexually, anything of that nature. They'll sell out every time. And again, she's selling out because this might be good for me to have this Bill Clinton endorsement moving forward. The left has no shame, none. Coming up, you need to be updated on how bad the crisis is at the border, and it is a crisis.
This is Larry Connors USA.
Larry Connors USA.
You've been listening to Larry Connors USA. Please listen to previous and future podcasts.